Hey, this is a message for those of you who like the Majority Report. If you like what we do around here, thoughtful, progressive analysis, sometimes funny, we also do some other stuff besides that, you're going to love the print or the digital version of Current Affairs magazine. Current Affairs combines intelligent commentary, biting political satire, and actually, like, gorgeous artwork to produce one of the country's most elegant and informative magazines, and it's all ad-free. Current Affairs is a fantastic complement to the Majority Report. We've had Nathan Robinson on many times on this program. The reporting they do over there, the analysis, honestly, great stuff. They got a story on the top of their page now about those comedians who are going to Riyadh to play for the Saudi prince. Marin had actually something funny to say about that. But nevertheless, check out the magazine. They've got great stories that you may have missed in other places. Use the code Majority Report. You get 30% off any subscription of your choice for the year. Go to currentaffairs.org/subscribe. Enter the code Majority Report at checkout. Offer expires October 31st. And now, time for this show.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, September 29, 2025. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Cory Doctorow, author of Inshittification, Why Everything Suddenly Got Worse and What to Do About It. Also on the program, Trump meets with Schumer as the shutdown looms. Meanwhile, Supreme Court gives Trump to unilaterally rescind congressional appropriations. This via foreign aid, but why even sign a budget if he can just rescind it? Trump to meet Netanyahu as Trump Organization inks a new $1 billion deal in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia.
That's a coincidence.
Kash Patel corrects Trump, says the FBI agents were called to the Capitol for crowd control after the riots started. Trump sends 200 National Guard to Portland, Oregon. No one knows why. I mean, they know why. This as ICE march in Chicago. Trump to speak at the Hegseth convened military loyalty oath meeting tomorrow. Senator Thune calls for U.S. farmers to be bailed out as the administration decides to bail out Argentina. Trump's asked SCOTUS for birthright citizenship ban. And Eric Adams drops out of the New York mayoral race. Unclear which real estate developer he'll end up being hired by. Finally, at least four killed in an attack on a Mormon church in Michigan by a vet who thought Mormons to be the Antichrist. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks so much for joining us.
Fun day Monday.
Fun day Monday.
That's what we call it here.
It's nice to have these legacy nicknames for days.
I know.
Remind us of what was back in the day. A lot of news, obviously, over the weekend. This thing in Michigan, again, horrific. I mean, it seems like a weekly event where we have someone with weapons. I mean, in this instance, a guy drove his truck into a Mormon church, shot up people. You will not hear much of it because it does not fit into the rubric of what the administration wants to push right now.
Yep.
We'll talk about this later. Over at the beginning of the week, and I guess it was Friday, Stephen Miller was out there basically talking. You know, this is, what is it, step two of the Reichstag fire plan? We're going to see more of this. It's just going to get worse. There is no returning to an era where we don't have fascism before it gets worse.
I mean, just anticipate, like, when we see how bad things are right now, the economy is not going to improve in the short term, at the very least. And I anticipate more of these authoritarian actions by the administration as a way to combat that and combat dissent. And Ken Klippenstein, we'll get to it later, but had great reporting on this. They are going to be monitoring, it seems to be the case, anti-capitalist, anti-Trump administration dissent, and using that as a way to justify surveilling them and cracking down. And so it's not going to just be immigrants, as some people anticipated, as if that wasn't bad enough.
Well, I mean, there's an old poem about this, right? First they came for. Yeah. I mean, listen, and this is going to be the they're claiming they're sending 200 troops to Portland to fight against riots or out-of-control protesters. And, of course, what's going to happen is the injection of these people is going to cause protests, and then that's going to become the rationale. I'm in no way suggesting don't protest, but what I am suggesting is you watch this dynamic, and because the more it is anticipated, the less effective it is. That's it. In the meantime, here are in Chicago, they have injected, and we don't know who these people are. These guys could be, you know, some combination of FBI. Incidentally, the lowest amount of drug apprehensions in the in years by the FBI over the past couple of months, because they've all been pulled off of actual police work and now are in charge of marching through cities.
Same with the human trafficking stuff.
Mm-hmm. Of course. And so these are federal police. We don't know really what agency they come from. Some could be FBI. Some theoretically could be DEA. Some could be prison guards. Some could be newly hired ICE agents. But they're marching around in Chicago in a show of force to, I guess, people who are visiting the city, or tourists, or working or living in the city. Oh, pause it. And just in case, pause it right there. Just in case you're wondering why they're in almost full military gear, there's a couple of brave ones who are just wearing cowboy hats. But the rest of them are wearing full tactical gear. And of course,
masks up.
And of course, 90% of them are masked, as we've seen. That's generally when we watch fascists march through a city. We saw this the other day in Iowa. 90% of them are masks.
I guess masks are okay when you're harming other people as opposed to protecting other people.
Well, maybe they're concerned about catching COVID, which is legitimate, but they're probably wearing them for the same reason, I would imagine, when other fascist militia march through cities. They don't want to be recognized. They're embarrassed by what they're doing. And, you know, I guess some measure of credit goes to these people that they know they should be embarrassed.
Yeah.
Here is a guy caught on a body cam of an ICE official caught on camera by somebody else's body cam. Maybe it was a cop, a local cop. It's unclear, but listen to what this guy up in Cato, New York. This is Cato, New York is like up near I think it's like north of Syracuse, somewhere up in that area, Rochester, Syracuse area, near Lake Ontario, but you know, so relatively close to the border, I guess. And you should know, 100 miles from the border in is where ICE can operate. So, which is like 70% of the population in this country. But here he is. Listen to the way that he speaks of immigrants.
There's countries like Brazil and other places where they're literal street rats at a very young age and they're committing crimes. And then they come here. I don't know if you have kids, but they'll eat our kids for breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. They're street rats and they'll eat our kids for breakfast.
They're basically, he's calling them, thugs and criminals and cannibals almost. Vermin. Barely human. In fact, they are less than subhuman in that estimation because a dog can be your companion or a cat. They're actually an active threat to your children.
Let's look at one of these very crafty individuals. We don't know the origin of this person, but it's unclear to me what he's going to get, but he's a delivery guy. This is in Chicago. And this is just fun because it gives you an opportunity to see our boys in camo operate.
Tier one operators.
Here. Oh, man.
They're
salute.
Some of them are border patrol. Of course, they're wearing masks and they're in Chicago, which incidentally, not a border town. But nevertheless, they're here to protect you and get those bad delivery guys. Ready? Go. Oh.
I like that guy wasn't
Hold
mad.
On. I want you to do this. Yeah, yeah. Go
you
back there. Now, I want you to slow-mo right here. And can you play it on slow-mo? Okay, all right, go. All right, watch this. Look at this guy chasing him. Now, watch. He has to. He's so out of breath. He runs around the white thing there. Incidentally, those white things are like, they flop.
Yeah.
And he has to go around it like he's in like some type of obstacle course.
Yeah, exactly. Or he's doing a cone drill. He would not have made varsity.
Hold on. Do that. Play that one more time, and I'm going to just go like this. Ready?
We have a soundtrack.
And go.
What did the guys in the back think they were going to do?
Yeah. Oh, we're going to get him. We're going to get him.
This is my one chance to show effort today.
Exactly.
They don't want to be on tape not hustling.
Exactly. No, look at me.
It's like looking busy.
Oh, God. I love that that guy made them look like a bunch of Home Alone villains.
Wow, that was... That guy was fast. What kind of bike was that? Wow.
Not a single runner. Hired like 50,000 guys that can't do like 2 minutes of running.
They're all wearing cowboy boots too, and there's other like, oh, they got some blisters.
Yeah,
they're already out of shape, and now they're like in like 100 pounds of body armor.
They're dressed for Fallujah,
right? Like that delivery driver has to do cardio all the time on that bike. You thought you were gonna outrun him?
All right, come on.
Calves are better than Sam's back in the day.
Well, let's not get carried away. All right, go back. Ready? Let's go back. One, two, and three.
Bye-bye.
That's the favorite part, too, where they all, like, sort of run into each other. All right. Well, we tried. Well, what are you gonna do?
We're gonna put
out all APB out on that guy. Who is he? I think it was that chicken parm sandwiches in there.
APB is like, I don't understand you. Can you please again?
Who's riding the bike? Okay, well, I hyperventilate. Let me just need 5 minutes. Oh, my God. All right. In a moment, we're going to be talking to Cory Doctorow, author of Shitification, Why Everything Suddenly Got Worse and What to Do About It. First, couple words from our sponsors. One of our sponsors today. Long work weeks, busy weekends can have you feeling and looking depleted.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Do tell. But Prolon has a 5-day fasting mimicking diet that works at the cellular level to rejuvenate you from the inside out. They provide real results that include fat-focused, sustainable weight loss with no injection needed. Now they're up in their game with the next generation 5-day program, delivering the same science-backed benefits in a cleaner, more convenient, and more flavorful format. Prolon is a plant-based nutrition program. It features soups, snacks, and beverages designed to nourish the body while keeping it in a fasting state. Triggers cellular rejuvenation and renewal. It has been developed over decades at the USC's Longevity Institute. They've got all the literature over on their site. Backed by top U.S. medical centers, Prolon's been shown to support biological age reduction, metabolic health, skin appearance, and fat loss, and energy. The next gen builds the original Prolon with 100% organic soups and teas. It's a richer taste and a ready-to-eat meals. Look, it is a 5-day plan that, you know, when I did it, I thought it was going to be very, very difficult. It was not easy, but it was not nearly as hard as I thought it would be. And I had a lot of energy. The hardest part was really, honestly, sitting down with Saul and having him like get like, you know, really dramatic bites of his food,
right,
totally, while I had mine. But, yeah, you know, by the second or third day, that little chocolate Cocoa Crisp that they give you for dessert, like on day three, you're like, oh my God,
right,
this is so amazing. But really, energy was great. You feel great doing it and after. And the research shows helps with longevity. Start to think about that more at my age. For a limited time, Prolon's offering listeners 15% off site-wide, plus a $40 bonus gift when you subscribe to their 5-day program. Just visit prolonlife.com/majority. That's prolonlife.com/majority to claim your 15% discount and your bonus gift. prolonlife.com/majority. Check the podcast and YouTube descriptions for more information. Also sponsoring the program today, Smalls. What is Smalls? Smalls is a real cat food, protein-packed, made preservative-free with ingredients that you would find in your fridge. Right now, if you're a listener to the program, you can get 60% off your first order plus free shipping. Head to smalls.com. Use our promo code MAJORITY for a limited time only. They deliver it right to your door. And Cats.com named Smalls their best overall cat food. I don't need to hear that from Cats.com, with all due respect, because my cat loves this stuff. And I will say that I've had the cat now, the new cat, for we're getting close to a year. And I feel like we hit something. And I don't know if it was the Smalls or what, because he loves the broth.
Oh, yeah.
And but they also have the food, but he loves the bird broth, essentially, the chicken and turkey broth. And we have hit some type of change in our relationship. The cat and I snuggle.
Wow.
I think it's also, it's like he's calmed down because he's not a kitten anymore, but like he'll let me sleep until like 6:30.
Very nice.
He will sleep on my bed now with me. Then he'll walk all over my face, but
it's part of the charm.
He is pooping in the litter box. Things are good right now. But cats, I mean, excuse me, Smalls also has amazing treats and snacks you can add to your order. Like I say, my cat loves the broth. And I think it's good for them, too, because they never drink enough water, cats.
Yeah.
Regardless, after switching to Smalls, 88% of cat owners reported overall health improvements. That's a big deal. And if you have a picky cat, Smalls will send you, has a sampler, so you can try everything Smalls has to offer, figure out which one the cat loves, then you're locked in. Team at Smalls is so confident your cat's going to love their product, you can try it risk-free. That means they'll refund you if your cat won't eat their food. What are you waiting for? Give your cat the food they deserve for a limited time only because you are a Majority Report listener. 60% off your first Smalls order plus free shipping by using our code MAJORITY. That's 60% off when you head to smalls.com. Use the promo code MAJORITY. Again, promo code MAJORITY. 60% off plus free shipping at smalls.com. Again, check our podcast and YouTube description for more information. Quick break. When we come back, Cory Doctorow, his new book is out, or I think it's coming out in a day or two.
October 7th.
In a week. Inshittification, why everything suddenly got worse and what to do about it. We are back, Sam Seder, Emma Viglin on the Majority Report. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program Cory Doctorow, author of Inshittification, Why Everything Suddenly Got Worse and What to Do About It. Cory, welcome back to the program.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be back on. Thank you so much for having me.
And congrats on the new book. It is, I had an advanced copy, and it is awesome. And I have to say, like, the concept of inshittification you've been writing about for a long time, and it is, or it feels like it, maybe I have no sense of time anymore. And it feels like people really understand this almost like inherently, or at least they're aware of the experience. But walk us through sort of the process of inshittification. And this, I mean, walk us through this, but you can see this in not just online stuff, it feels like, but this is where it's sort of really almost art form.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, as you may recall, I've spent most of my adult life, 24 years now, working for the Electronic Frontier Foundation on what you might broadly call digital human rights. And getting people to understand those issues, it's kind of an uphill battle. It's very abstract. So I coined this term in shitification. And it turns out that giving people like a minor license to be slightly profane is what it takes to get people to care about these very complicated technical issues. So in shitification proposes a kind of theory of platform decay, what it looks like when they go bad, why they're going bad at once now, and why it's so hard for us to leave them even after they turn bad, and then finally, what we can do about it. And, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, well, you know, like, I know that this happens sometimes with restaurants. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the people don't come in, they start to cut back on quality of stuff, and it starts the demise. But in this instance, this is almost like, this is the plan. As opposed to like a restaurant, you know, sort of like that's when they're struggling. This is the plan of the essentially this is the business plan.
Well, I would say it's not so much the plan as the playbook, because I actually reject the idea that these guys had the executive function or forethought to lay in wait for us so long, leaving a platform that was good for a while. Maybe I should say, you know, the characteristic pattern of enshittification is you have platforms that are good to their end users, find a way to lock those users in, then make things better for their business customers, find a way to lock the business customers in, make things worse for them, and then turn into a pile of shit. That's the enshittification thesis. And I don't think they have the long-term forethought. I think they're like too ketamine-addled and ADHD to do this. I think what happened was we used to have constraints where when these people got a bad idea about how to make things worse for us to make things better for them, they either realized or someone else convinced them that if they did it, they'd get punished, that competitors would swoop in or that hard to replace employees would leave or that regulators would clobber them or that new technology would be developed. So something that made a, you know, 11-foot ladder to go over the 10-foot pile of shit they just thought of. And what happened was over decades, as we got rid of all those constraints, the punishments that these completely mediocre, terrible people used to worry about, or that used to stay their hand, or that used to punish them if they didn't worry about it enough and they went ahead with it, then what happened was that these guys were able to yield to their worst impulses and things just got better for them and worse for us.
Does it have to do with the structure of big tech and the move fast, break things period, where there was so much investment money, there was an attempt to grow the economy through the tech sector, and these tools, whether it be social media or what have you, weren't straightforward in how they were going to make money for these guys. So they created these tools, raised a shit ton of money, and then they have to work backwards from that. Like, that's what it feels like more than anything. It's a failure of our government to catch up to these new technologies, but even more so, it's a function of speculative capitalism.
See, I actually completely disagree. I think
it's the regulatory environment.
So, you know, look at Google. Google wasn't like not making money, right? It wasn't like Google was like getting an investor subsidy like OpenAI is now, and then just had to figure out how to turn the screws to make money. Google was the most profitable company in the history of the world. And then they made things worse. And so it wasn't because of an overinvestment trying to catch up. It's because policymakers, far from failing to keep up with technology, took decisions, right? Like, we decided to stop enforcing antitrust law. So you have Google, which is a company that had one good idea in the previous millennium when they made a really good search engine and has had no good ideas since. Everything they've done successfully since then was a company they bought in defiance of antitrust law through forbearance for predatory acquisitions. And, you know, their internal measures are all things that failed. And we also let these companies invade our privacy. Again, that's not Congress failing to anticipate this. This is Congress just not acting. The last time Congress gave us a new federal privacy consumer law was in 1988 when Reagan banned video store clerks from telling the newspapers which VHS cassettes you had. That's why Google spies on us. It's not because they failed to catch up. It's because we let them merge to monopoly. We let the internet turn into five giant websites filled with screenshots of text from the other four. When you have a cartel or a monopoly or a duopoly, they capture their regulators. Their workers were too short-sighted to unionize when they had a ton of power. And so to the extent that they were able to hold the line by saying, no, I'm not going to shitify that thing I missed my mother's funeral to ship on time for you, and the guy across the street will give me a job if you fire me and try and make me do it, that, you know, went away as soon as supply caught up with demand. We've had 500,000 tech layoffs in the last 3 years. And we saw the monotonic expansion of IP law that makes reverse engineering, ad blocking, interoperable clients, alt clients, things that, you know, would allow technologists, whether working for startups or co-ops or individuals, to check those bad impulses. We saw them go away. So if I can give one little example here, in 1998, Bill Clinton signed the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. It's a law that bans reverse engineering. It carries a 5-year prison sentence and a $500,000 fine. And what that means is that if you just design your product so that it doesn't have an open way to alter its behaviors, so that you have to reverse engineer it to change how it works, then it just becomes illegal to change how it works. This is how we ended up with like printer ink, where you can't just install generic ink. It's not that it's hard to overcome the thing that checks for generic ink. It's just a crime, right? So imagine like we're in a product planning meeting for our website, and the guy running the meeting, he says, I got an idea. We're going to make the ads 20% more obnoxious and invasive. We'll get a 2% increase in top line ad revenue. That's our big KPI. Everyone's going to get rich. Someone who doesn't care about user welfare is going to stick their hand up and say, you know, Elon, I love how you think, but has it occurred to you, we make the ads 20% more obnoxious, 40% of our users are going to install an ad blocker, because you don't need to reverse engineer an ad web browser to put in an ad blocker. 51% of web users have installed an ad blocker. It's the biggest boycott in human history. Meanwhile, it's illegal to do that for an app because you have to reverse engineer the app to do it. So when we say, okay, well, how obnoxious are we going to make the ads in the ad blocker, in the app rather, that same person's going to say, oh no, you should make them like 100% more obnoxious, get a 10% increase in revenue. And it's not like we didn't warn that this would happen when this law was passed. The guy who was responsible for this law, Bruce Lehman, Bill Clinton's IP czar, he was laughed out of Al Gore's information superhighway hearings. He was chased to Geneva, where he made it a WIPO treaty at the UN. And then Congress was warned when they passed it. These are like totally foreseeable outcomes. It's not that these guys are so smart they're running circles around Congress. It's that Congress created the enshittogenic environment, and then we got enshittocene.
And in that environment, is that created simply because of the sort of like move away from the prior existing antitrust sort of perspective, I mean, which we saw a return, brief as it were, was during the Biden administration. Yeah. That's when a lot of these cases, some of the cases were actually started during the Trump years, but a lot of these cases in terms of Google in particular. And, you know, I suppose we could debate as to whether or not the judges understand the political environment they're in. We just saw the remedy part of one of the Google cases was a joke. I mean, just an absolute farce.
Yeah.
So what, and I know you write about this obviously in the book, but this impulse is just simply always to like water flowing downhill in terms of a pursuit of whatever small profit increase there can be. And if there's no dam there essentially or obstacle, they're just going to go.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, these guys, they get up every morning and they go grab the giant lever yanked in shitification in the C-suite. And it used to be that stuff used to stop the lever, right? They had to worry about competitors and regulators and workers and other technologies, and they don't have to worry about it. So the lever has been sort of lubricated and it moves really freely. You know, you mentioned that the judge failed in the Google case, and boy, did that judge Amit Mehta ever fail. But, you know, it's not like the judges got a mind virus or something. Like, we even know how the judges lost track of how antitrust law works. So, you know, there was this like fringe guy, Robert Bork, who was a, you know, arch conservative Nixonite criminal, failed to be appointed to the Supreme Court. And he had this idea.
He was borked.
That's where the term borked comes from. And one of the ways he got borked, by the way, was that his video rental history was leaked, which is why Ronald Reagan signed the last privacy law we ever got. Turned out the best thing you could say about Robert Bork is he had pretty good taste in movies. But I think Congress were like, oh no, when they leak my video rental history, it's going to be bad. So they moved to ban it. So, you know, you had this fringe guy, Robert Bork, and he had these bad ideas that antitrust was, you know, a fool's errand, that when you saw a monopoly, it was because like companies were good, right? If 90% of the world uses Google search, it's because it's the best search, and it would be really perverse to punish Google for making a product we all love. And so, you know, they put a lot of money behind that project. They convinced Jimmy Carter to start with the agenda. Reagan really picked it up. But here's the thing, they played an inside-outside game, because judges have to go for continuing education courses, just like any other professional. And they funded this thing called the Mann Seminars, M-A-N-N-E. They're these luxury junkets in Florida, all expenses paid. 40% of the federal judiciary graduated from it. And it was just a session where you would learn about how antitrust was bad and monopolies were efficient. There's good empirical work from Princeton researchers showing that judges who attended the Mann seminars went on to rule differently, to rule in favor of monopolies. And it wasn't just those judges that were affected, because they created an edifice of precedent, right? So this was just like concentrated wealth, right? Like, again, it's tempting to think of this as like the great forces of history or an intrinsic function of capitalism or the iron laws of economics. These were just like a bunch of guys whose names we know, who did stuff that would have this predictable outcome, and many of whom are like still alive and walking around today and not worrying that someone's going to size them up for a pitchfork. And we kind of let them off the hook when we say, oh, well, Congress couldn't keep up, or, you know, it's because of VCs. VCs want as much profit as they can get, but they don't want to do things that aren't profitable. Like when I used to run a website with some friends called Boing Boing, still around. I'm not involved in it anymore. And in the early days of the web, pop-up ads were everywhere, and not these like wussy pop-up ads you get now that are like a box inside your browser. It was a whole other browser window. It was one pixel square. It auto-played music. It ran away from your cursor. And we would try to tell our advertisers, you know, like, everyone hates these. We don't want to put them in our website. And they'd be like, well, then we don't want to pay for ads in your website. But as soon as ad blocking was turned on by default in the major browsers, we just went to them and said, here's our log files. 90% of our users never see a pop-up ad. And all of a sudden, this thing that they were absolutely demanding with no exceptions possible became a thing they didn't give a damn about. VCs only want the things that will make money for them. And the policy environment determines what the rest of us do when they enshittify the products we like. You know, when Mark Zuckerberg was tempting people off of MySpace, he didn't rely on them leaving MySpace, going to Facebook, and then waiting for their dumb friends to join them. He knew that they liked their friends more than they hated Rupert Murdoch. So he gave them a bot. It had a login and a password field. It would go to MySpace several times a day. It would grab everything waiting for them there, put them in their Facebook inbox. And you could reply to them on Facebook, push it back out to MySpace. And he just bled off their users. But, you know, the expansion of IP law over 20 years means that if you do that to Mark Zuckerberg, he will nuke you till you glow. And so, like, again, we told the people who made these policies that this was going to happen. They were like, oh, you're being hysterical. And here we are, the world's most mediocre billionaires in charge of 4 billion people's social media lives.
Once that original sin is committed, right, where they think like, oh, you're exaggerating. We need to let this be a fertile ground for growth, blah, blah, blah. Is it that much harder to get it back? I mean, a lot of what you talk about in the book is like, you know, the mass movements that we need to reverse things. But it's that much harder now, too. I mean, mm-hmm. on some level, right? Because Zuckerberg's spending a lot of money to, he no longer has to convince people as much. And incidentally, I got to say, that man thing, I had no idea about that professional. Like, I know that world in terms of lawyers, but that makes total sense. Somebody's funding that thing. It's like what happened with OxyContin.
It is exactly what happened with OxyContin. I mean,
it's just marketed to the tastemakers, essentially.
Yeah. That's exactly what happened. So, I mean, I think that sorry, I lost the question because I was thinking about OxyContin.
Let me rephrase it.
No. Just refresh me.
Well, it was like, you know, the obstacles that were faced in reversing it are far greater than maybe that's in the first place.
Okay, I remember now. But yeah.
Let me just add to that in that the environment we're going to be dealing with, if we get to a post-Trump era, like, is going to have to be much more radical change. Like, there's no returning back to where
we
were.
Right. That's right.
So, I mean, talk about like.
Sure. So, yeah, it, look, the people who created our antitrust laws, right? The first one was like Senator John Sherman, brother of Tecumseh Sherman, you know, the guy who burned Atlanta. You know, they said if we wouldn't allow a king to rule the country, we shouldn't allow an autocrat of trade. And they understood that, that, you know, people like John D. Rockefeller were more powerful than most state governments and arguably more powerful than the U.S. government. It was a real uphill slog. And one of the things that laws like the Sherman Act and the Clayton Act take aim at is something called incipiency. So it's not like a merger that will create enough power to take over the government, but a merger that will create enough power to create another merger, to create another merger to take over the government. This idea that you want to stop these roll-ups like we see with like private equity, where they buy one funeral home at a time, but eventually all the funeral homes in your neighborhood are owned by one private equity fund. And when you die, you're going to pay rent to them. So the decision not to enforce antitrust law created these monopolies that were very hard to budge. In 1970, the DOJ sued IBM, and that lawsuit went on until 1982, for 12 consecutive years. They called it antitrust's Vietnam. IBM spent more on lawyers to fight the DOJ antitrust division than all the lawyers in the DOJ antitrust division cost the U.S. government. They outspent the U.S. government for more than a decade. They ran out the clock. Reagan got elected, and he halted the case, and so they won. And so you can see why it's like much better to prevent monopolies while they're forming than it is to wait for them to become mature, to become bigger than governments. And I tell this to libertarian friends. I'm like, guys, you think that the only role for a government is enforcing contracts? All right, then. Well, the referee is certainly going to have to be more powerful than the players on the field. The smallest government you can have has to be bigger than the largest corporation you're willing to tolerate. Otherwise, they're not going to do the job you think that they should be doing. And with all that said, and it is very dispiriting, and like all the best Americans, I'm Canadian, and I'm reminded at times like this of this Canadian aphorism from down east that if you wanted to get there, I wouldn't start from here. And with all that said, something I think that's like quietly miraculous has happened since the late 2010s that a lot of progressives and leftists have not noticed, which is that all over the world, we've seen this surge of antitrust action. Right.
Yeah. In Europe, I was about to ask you about that, Corey. They're the kind of leading the charge on antitrust with big tech, if you don't mind expanding on that.
They sure are. Yeah. The Digital Markets Act, the Digital Services Act. I'll give you an idea of how muscular and far reaching the Digital Markets Act is. Apple has just threatened to stop selling iPhones in Europe. Right. Which is like not going to happen. Right. You know, like we fetch about how shareholders are short term. But like this is one place where it works in our favor. You know, Tim Cook going to his shareholders and saying, sure, we're not going to sell phones to 500 million affluent consumers right now. But eventually the EU will capitulate and they'll be like, no. We want money in the next quarter. Forget that. Right. So it's not just Europe, though. So Canada has had a very weak competition regulator through most of its history. Our Competition Bureau in its history challenged three mergers and was successful zero times. But in 2024, a guy who's kind of a corporate lickspittle, Justin Trudeau, led a three-line whip for his MPs and passed the most muscular, big, aggressive antitrust law in Canadian history. Now the Competition Bureau is one of the most powerful in the world. We've seen antitrust action in the UK under a series of like extremely shambolic, far-right, terrible prime ministers. And not only that, but tech antitrust, where the digital markets unit was the largest technical antitrust unit in the world, 70 full-time engineers on HMG's payroll. But we saw it in Australia and we saw it in China. The Chinese cyberspace directive bans Chinese tech companies, the big ones, from blocking little ones from competing with them. Because I think Xi Jinping really believes that these companies are not an arm of Chinese soft power abroad, that they're a competitor for Chinese state power at home. And so even he's, you know, reached the end of his rope with these guys. And, you know, political science, there's like big studies of, you know, the Princeton study of thousands of political outcomes that concluded that the preferences of the public are effectively irrelevant. You know, right. if billionaires want something, it happens. If billionaires don't want something, it doesn't. It doesn't matter how popular or unpopular it is with the public. This is like defying all political logic. This is water flowing uphill, right? The law of gravity has been repealed all over the world. No one really knows why.
And I was just going to ask you, like, what do you, why, Why do you think that's the case? And I know you have a hard out. Is it? It's at 12:55. Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. In 8 minutes, I've got to go to my next call. Yeah.
Why do you think that is? Or is it just like an awareness of? Is it just that it's become so excessive and obvious? I mean, in this country, it's quite clear that we can't even, to the extent that we're going to be getting economic numbers anymore out of this administration, the economic numbers that have ostensibly told the story in the past are no longer actually telling the story they purport to, because we have such a concentration of wealth that it's almost like a far more smaller group of people can change what the economy looks like from 30,000 feet. When you get closer to the ground, it's a very different story.
Yeah, the consumption numbers just tell you what billionaires are spending, and everyone else is like, you know, sitting on a mountain of credit card debt and stuck in place. So I think, you know, there's a lot of different factors coming together here. So, you know, Stein's law out of the finance sector says anything that can't go on forever eventually stops. And I think that's sort of what you were just describing, that people have really reached the end of their tether. But there's also this idea that, like, political change is downstream of coalition formation, right? You know, the reason the Trump coalition is so powerful is because a bunch of people who hate each other agreed to work together, right? When you have like Christian dominionists and like Hindu nationalists and, you know, isolationists and imperialists all under the same umbrella, right? That's very weird, right? And you see that it's very powerful when it happens. My friend James Boyle, he talks about this in the context of the environmental movement. He says that before the term ecology entered our lexicon in the 70s, people didn't know they were on the same side. You know, you care about owls, I care about the ozone layer. It's like, what's charismatic nocturnal avians have to do with the gaseous composition of the upper atmosphere? We're not really on the same team, but you can weld a team together by creating this conceptual framework for it. And I think there's this sense that concentrated wealth is the source of so many of our problems. And while people are like not super au fait with antitrust law because it's been in a coma for 50 years, there is this, I think, like inchoate understanding that anti-monopoly is anti-wealth concentration. Like literally, that's just what it means. And, you know, maybe like generations of playing a terrible board game in our living rooms have taught us what a monopoly is, at least, right? And so when you say, oh, we're going to fight monopolies, people may not have a sharp connection between that and the problems that they're facing. But they do know that like this wealth concentration stuff is what's poisoning everything else. And I think that's true on the right. I think that's why you get populist right-wing figures like Matt Gaetz, of all people, who call themselves a conservative for Lena Khan. You know, there's like, I think those people are waiting to be picked off by us, frankly, you know, because the conservatives are not going to deliver on their anti-monopoly promises. You know, Trump is just going to use monopoly law to extract settlement payments from and concessions from companies, you know, to make companies, you know, give him all kinds of favorable media attention in exchange for letting Larry Ellison buy every media outlet in America, you know?
Right. It's an umbrella for essentially for bribes.
But
there still has to be at least some pretend, I think, sort of like support of the broad concept.
Yeah. And lip service.
Yes. And I guess, you know, ultimately, maybe that lip service ultimately can be exploited. What can people do? Is it even like, is there any value in the short term of like particular habits at this point to push back? Or is it ultimately we need political movements to get real change?
Well, I don't think it'll surprise you to hear that I'm skeptical of changing your consumption habits as a way of changing the world. I don't think that you're going to like shop hard enough to make monopolies go away in the same way that it doesn't matter how many buckets you sort your recycling into. It's not going to end the climate emergency, right?
Right.
But you know, that's not to say that there aren't good reasons, personal reasons to change what you do. If like Twitter is ruining your mental health and you think Blue Sky will be better, by all means, join Blue Sky or Mastodon. Not because like it's going to hurt Elon Musk, but because it might help you. And if, you know, if there's like a vendor you like, or like a artist or a performer and you support them, that's great. You know, by all means, it's like helping someone put groceries on their table and a roof over their head to do something that makes you happy. Sure. Right. But it's not change. Change comes from, as you say, political movements. It's a systemic problem. I, as I mentioned, I've worked for the Electronic Frontier Foundation for going on 25 years now. We have a national network of community and regional activist groups called the Electronic Frontier Alliance, efa.eff.org. Electronic Frontier Alliance from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. And they work on local stuff, things like facial recognition ordinances, limits on landlords colluding to raise rent using price sharing platforms, state laws on right to repair, all kinds of issues that are really striking at the way that monopolies insert themselves into your life personally, right? And there's a lot of room at the state level and at the local level to do this stuff. One of the interesting factors about today's tech monopolies that makes them different from, say, John D. Rockefeller and Standard Oil is that they do the same bad thing to everyone everywhere in the world. You know, John D. Rockefeller had a bunch of monopolies over like oil wells and pipelines and refineries in America and over ports in Germany. And when trustbusters in Germany and trustbusters in America talked to each other, they had nothing really to say except they didn't like this Rockefeller guy. But it wasn't like they could help each other with their case. Whereas now we get British tech regulators writing reports on abuses in the mobile payments market. You have European regulators turning those into laws and court cases. And you have those court cases being copied, translated, and pasted into successful cases in South Korea and Japan. And what we're doing in America with the Electronic Frontier Alliance is we are replicating the successes against Flock, against RealPage, against predictive policing companies, across different territories within the U.S. because it's the same scam everywhere, right? And so the thing that works in one place works somewhere else.
Well, we will put a link to that. And it's also, I imagine, a great place to go and build a larger movement because you're bringing people in there from multiple ideologies.
That's right.
Corey, where can people find Enshittification? I mean, the book. I know it's everywhere.
yeah. Any bookstore will have it. It's published by Macmillan, by their Forestres and Giroux imprint. And they're one of the big five, so they're distributed nationally. You can go to bookshop.org if you don't want to buy Jeff Bezos another penis-shaped rocket. And, you know, the one tricky part of my sales channel is that Amazon won't carry my audiobooks because they're not locked to Amazon's platform. I refuse to do that. So you can't get them on Amazon, you can't get them on Audible, and you can't get them on audiobooks.com. You can get them everywhere else. So Libro.fm carries them, Downpour, even Google Play, because they don't have this lock-in stuff for audiobooks. They have lock-in for other stuff. And you can get my ebooks and audiobooks from me, too. I have an ebook and audiobook store, craphound.com/shop. And it is the only place I know of in the world where you can buy an ebook from a major publisher that is a sale and not a license. You own it. You can sell it to someone else. You can give it away. You can lend it out. If you and your partner divorce, you can divide it up in the estate. You can leave it to your kids. So craphound.com/shop.
All right. We'll put a link to that as well. Corey, really appreciate your work always. And thank you so much for coming on and talking.
I appreciate having me on. We'll have to do this again when we have more time. I got to get on my next call.
Yes,
all right.
Please.
Lovely chatting with you guys. Thanks, Emma.
Yep,
thanks, Sam.
Thanks, Corey.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, folks.
Yeah.
That's it for us today in the free half of the show. And we're going to head into the fun half of the program where we've got a lot more to talk about. But check out that EFA at the EFF. The EFF also was very helpful back in the day when somebody who had sat on a podcast patent was trying. Were you here with that? No, you weren't.
No, but the premise of your Marin episode, isn't it?
This was the premise of the Marin episode because I got contacted around the same time as Marin, and Marin was a bigger fish, but I can't remember at the time, but I had been in contact with the EFF as guests, so I connected them. I was just getting very excited because the patent trolls wanted to talk to my CFO, and I was sitting in literally a closet almost with Michael and Matt Binder, and I'm like, oh, okay. What I'll do is I'll get one of those accountant hats, and I'm going to do a Zoom call with them, have Matt videotape it, and I'll go like, I'm going to get my CFO. Hey, guys. Just come back with the hat.
Wait, what's an accountant hat?
The just green a hat? Visor?
The green hat.
Oh, really? Yes.
Have you ever seen one of those?
God, yeah. I mean, that's old. That's like mafia movies. They wear them in those, right?
Did they wear? Well, I mean, in like the 20s, 1920s.
Yeah. Talking about 20th century iconography here.
Yeah. I mean, accountants, what are they now? Like just AI, basically? Got to be.
Yeah.
I mean, half replaced?
Nobody... Actually, there's a huge shortage of accountants. It turns out it's tough to find qualified accountants. I've been reading the FT lately.
It's been in shitification died.
It's close enough. That's the Leck approach to accounting is taking hold.
Folks, just keep in mind it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only get the free show, free of commercials, but you also get the fun half, and you keep this show thriving and surviving, frankly. We don't want to be at the mercy of a monopoly like Google. So your memberships are very, very helpful.
You're not going to testify on Google's behalf.
I've told that story here, right? Yes.
People can go deep cut if they
deep
want.
Deep cut on that. Also, if you're watching us on Twitch, you can give us your Amazon Prime subscription for the month. You can point it towards us. You don't have to pay anything. We don't obviously get your Amazon Prime subscription. You basically just attribute it to us for that month. And that's
otherwise,
big
it
help.
Goes to Jeff Bezos.
Exactly. Bezos is just like sitting on that stuff.
We want our own penis-shaped rocket.
Exactly.
There's probably like been a rocket launch just with the unused Twitch Prime subs.
Also, justcoffee.coop. They're a co-op. They're located in Madison, Wisconsin. They really support their growers in Central America and in Africa. And they have Majority Report blend, among other great blends or single origin coffees. Justcoffee.coop. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Matt, Left Reckoning.
Yeah, we had a Sunday show for our Left Reckoning patrons yesterday where we went into a new gubernatorial campaign, Andrew White in Texas, which kind of, it's not very inspiring, but also talked about Megyn Kelly, who's filling in for Charlie Kirk at TPUSA meetings, maybe staring into an abyss. She was unaware of how dark it was because she's taking questions about the role of particularly Jewish billionaires in the in air politics. And I'll just say it's going to be tough for anybody to try to straddle that right wing the way Charlie had it. I think they're in for a world I said the abyss. So yeah, check it out. Patreon.com/LeftReckoning. Show tomorrow night.
See you in the fun half.
3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on?
It's nuts.
Wait a second. Hold on for a second. The Majority
Report. Emma, welcome to the program. Matt!
Who? Fun hack. What is up, everyone? Fun
hack. Nomi Keen.
You did it! Fun
hack. Let's go, Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon. Fun hack.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women.
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But dude, you want to smoke this, 7-8?
Yes.
Hi, me? Is this me?
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports.
We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm going to go throw up.
Libertarian.
They're so stupid, though.
Common sense says, of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him.
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say.
857-210-35-501.
One half.
3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion.
Sold.
It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less.
But let me say this.
Poop.
You call it satire. Sam goes, satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about
yeah.
you is just like every day, all day, like
yeah.
everything you do.
Without a doubt.
Hey, buddy, we see you.
All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled,
wow.
folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. You gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock, we're already late, and the guy's being a dick. So screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you, bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Back.
We are back. Fun half, ladies and gentlemen. Monday.
Fun
Thank
half.
You for joining us. Beginning of the week.
One guy, one time.
I'm a stimming like Tim Pool.
Fun so half.
One
half. One guy, one fun.
Scary Carrie. Ask Brian how his comedy show went. Brian?
We did that off air.
What, was this person there? Were they there when I walked an entire table of people?
Yep, Brian, probably.
Brian got a little political, a little edgy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a little too much for the snowflakes down there.
Yeah, people don't want to see Stephen.
Apparently
Miller
comedy
having...
not legal anymore.
Actually, the shows were really good. That was just one problem table. It was the crowds were great.
Yeah, one problem table with 75 people sitting at it.
Hey.
Big tables at that place.
It's like legalized comedy.
Scary Carrie says, wasn't there. Just curious. They did not like Brian's airline stuff. Yeah. They found it too edgy. The his big airline. He does a big flights, like the food on the flights riff.
Right.
That's like 45 minutes.
The flotation device.
Your 45-minute flight chunk.
I feel reflexively defensive of Brian, but then I realize for men, jabbing at each other is a form of intimacy, so I have to just let that go.
Yep, there you go.
You making Jeez. Fun of him.
It's also the only way to be my friend.
This, there's a sort of like a comedic disposition.
Okay. It's not a gender thing?
No, it's not a gender thing. I can assure you.
Definitely not.
It really is not.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it happens at football practice, in the military, in comedy. I don't see what the gender thing could possibly be.
It's just typical men's locker room stuff. It's not yeah. gendered at all. Everybody in there does that. all right, let's start. Okay, yeah, let's, what is it? Which one, which number is this?
This is number.
Oh, actually, let's do some of the, I want to do, let's start with the shutdown, because we are now, let's see. 2 days away from a government shutdown. And we just had on Friday, understand where we sit. This is very important. The Supreme Court has allowed on Friday Donald Trump to pocket rescind, they call. But essentially what it really means is, as you know, according to the Constitution, the power to appropriate, or I should say, appropriate funds is handed to Congress. And on Friday, via, of course, the shadow docket, Supreme Court allowed Trump to unilaterally cancel $4 billion in foreign aid that was already appropriated by Congress. This is, just to be clear, the Supreme Court in the past has said that a line item veto is unconstitutional. That's just in a budget.
Yeah.
Like, never mind it already, sort of the budget already passing, and essentially it's the same thing, I guess.
I mean, it's diminishing Congress's power explicitly in favor of the unitary executive kind of theory that has been the conservative movement's been building on since Bush.
The president has the ability to impound in very, which is basically when you hold money that has been appropriated. But you only have 45 days, and Congress must then grant permission to continue that impoundment. And otherwise, they have to spend money. That's the statutory guidance here. So there's been a law passed, 1974. It was the Impoundment Control Act. But we also have the Constitution. So there's both like statutory and constitutional reasons why this isn't the case. But the point being is, if Donald Trump has the ability to take a budget, oh, we got to spend $100 billion on this healthcare program? Eh, no.
Who cares if, how you voted?
There is no point in participating in some type of budget fiasco because it is a farce. And so the idea that you should even, and this isn't just my idea. What was the congressman? The guy from, we had a Republican congressman. I think he was in Politico, who said the Democrats, you know, why would they participate if we can just impound? We got to find this. I can't find that congressman now, but and here's Chuck Schumer going on. He's going to meet with Trump today. He is desperately looking for a reason to vote for this. There's been a lot of pressure on Chuck Schumer not to make the same mistake that he made back in March, where he allowed for the vote to okay Trump's budget. And then actually, I think, I don't know if he actually voted for it. Maybe he did. The argument being, well, Trump and Russ vote are going to go crazy in a government shutdown. The American public needs to know what's going on. And here's Chuck Schumer's plan. Which clip is this?
This is about laying off 30,000. Oh.
No, I want the other one. Yeah, this is one of the things Schumer could ask for in these negotiations is things like a guarantee that none of these this stuff will be impounded. Or how about recalling and preventing U.S. military from entering U.S. cities? He's not going to ask for that because he has another plan. And his plan to keep military from going into cities is to rely on some good hearted Republicans because he knows that deep down Republicans are good, and he would be very, very disappointed if they didn't stop Donald Trump.
Is there anything you can do to stop it as in Congress?
Yes. First, we will fight it in the courts along with, you know, people who will file suits. But second, I would hope, Kristen, that some of our Republican colleagues, seeing I know they're loyal to Trump and does whatever he wants, but this is so far stepping over the line that I hope some of them would join us in legislation to prevent it from happening. We have such a proposal. I'm part of it.
Oh, you hope.
Hey.
Chuck, when you say that you hope, right, do you understand that you have leverage in this situation? Right? They need 60 votes in the Senate.
I know they got to follow Trump. Do you see what I just did?
Yeah, a little dance.
But did you see what I just did? I did. They got to follow Trump.
So are you zigging and zagging?
No.
Yeah.
He's active.
I'm embarrassing them. And now I'm also threatening them with extreme, extreme disappointment. You don't want to see me disappointed.
But why is that different than last time when he was very disappointed
in
the spring?
This is crossing the line. This is crossing
the
line.
Far over the line.
This is so far over the line that I'm going to be so disappointed that I'm going to see John Thune in the Senate lobby, and he's going to be walking in. Hi, Chuck. And I'm just going to look at him like...
You're going to give him the cold shoulder at the gym instead of the knee slapping that you were promising earlier.
I'm going to say...
Thigh slapping, sorry.
I'm going to say, John, I'm not angry with you. But I'm very disappointed. I thought you were better than this, John. That's right. Don't make me bring the wrath of extreme disappointment down upon your head. You be Ted Cruz. Ted, I can't.
Love is real.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
now I won't shut down the government.
We can come together. This is you're going on national television. Like, who is he talking to? This is so far across the line that I'm going to be disappointed. Like, you're not communicating anything to the American public. Don't go on TV.
It's like,
what are you doing
to a teenager? But this wouldn't even be effective at scolding a teenager. Yeah. They'd be like, "You're disappointed in me.
I'm taking the car
to a party or whatever." Do we have that other video of Schumer that we were laughing about earlier?
Oh yeah. Well, but I don't want you to think that like Schumer's not doing anything. Schumer is definitely doing something. Here is.
I couldn't figure out who this other guy was.
Okay, we don't know who he's talking.
The clip speaks for itself.
Okay, but yet Schumer, it's not just... Listen, Schumer has many, many arrows in his quiver, okay? It's not just extreme disappointment. Let me get in here so that you understand
really
what I'm
close.
Talking about. You ready? Here it goes. What else are we going to use?
And we're also dealing with the social media, which we didn't do enough of, frankly, in the past. And that was a mistake, and we're trying to rectify it.
I don't know who this guy is, but he seems very uncomfortable with the way that, Chuck Schumer's like,
It's because he's young.
Yeah,
he figured it out.
Listen to the way he said social media. Listen to the way he said social media. Go back and play it again. Ready? Listen to this. We're dealing with a secret special thing. We figured it out.
And you're a young person.
Right,
you know what
that's
about.
That's a young person's thing.
My
Here
secret
we go.
Weapon.
The secret. We've cracked it open. We know it exists.
And we're also dealing with the social media, which we didn't do enough of, frankly, in the past.
The social media.
Why was it so horny?
You know, it's like, it's this secret illicit area where people go in the illicit area, which we would never do before, but now we do.
Just blasting it with Metamucil.
Yes. The secret social media. I'm gonna lean in and tell you secret social media.
Oh, Jesus.
We've cracked the code. Yes. Oh my God.
We'll tick and we'll talk.
Yes, yes, again, I can do it. The old TikTok.
We need to get Chuck doing some dances.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. I even have a video camera. And a little microphone. So the whole thing.
Teach him the Cat's Eye Gap ad dance.
But lest you think that the Democrats aren't doing anything here. Chuck Schumer wants to remind you that we're doing stuff. We are doing stuff. So don't panic. Everything is getting a little bit marginally better. Here we go.
Oh.
Originally, they fired 80,000 from the Veterans Administration. Now it's 30,000. That's still bad, but it shows you the heat is on them when they do this, and the American people won't like it at all.
I see. Oh. You see. This is the thing. People don't, like, one thing's about the fascists.
Mm-hmm.
They hate to feel like people are disappointed at them. They hate it.
Yeah.
They hate it.
They're anti-democratic, and so I'm going to appeal to them.
I am so disappointed. President Trump, how could you? Oh.
Well, now that I think about it, right, they are they are fascist, they are authoritarian, they are anti-democratic, and Chuck Schumer's entire argument is appealing to them based on popular will.
It also...
I have nothing to add except to say that. Yeah.
It doesn't even occur to them, too. Like, yeah. they may be a little bit more sensitive to the vet situation than anything else, right? Like, okay, it didn't work so much with the kids needing health care, but all right. They flew in the generals first class. Because they popular opinion said, "Wait, why are these generals coming?" And so they said, "We're going to fly in."
They're popularists. They're the true popularists. We should be more like them. It's basically his whole argument. So the ACA subsidies thing, is that what they're going to try to get? Because that really the Republicans seem to kind of secretly want them to extend the ACA subsidies. Because they're about to approach this major cliff ahead of the midterms. And it seems like that's the only concession that Schumer is focusing on, as opposed to the stuff we're talking about, where maybe addressing or boxing the Republicans in on the rescissions for the budget, making sure that they assert themselves as a legislative body with the power of the purse, don't fully capitulate over to the Trump administration. How about stuff about ICE? Holding up the salaries of these ICE agents until they stop terrorizing our cities. He doesn't even need to achieve that. But if he goes out there and says what he's trying to do, that is how you say what the Democratic Party even stands for or is in opposition to. Chuck, are you back?
Well, I was just going to say, you're not aware that we were able to keep TikTok.
Right, right.
Everybody thought it was going to go away. That was one of the concessions we got.
And what do you mean by keep?
Yeah.
It's still...
who runs it?
It's
still on your phones and your computers.
Okay. Is
it the same? You still have it on all the social media.
Did anything change?
Didn't you vote to ban
it? It's all in the social media.
Didn't you vote to ban it, Chuck?
Okay.
It kind of muddles the message when you were part of the vote to ban it.
Okay, yes.
The heat is on them when they do this.
Yes, but yes, the heat.
Because I said the heat's on them, so it must be.
Listen, it's very uncomfortable for them. Very uncomfortable now.
It's an uncomfortable seizing power.
So, yes, but it's like, it's uncomfortable. They're sweaty. They're sweating.
I understand.
We've got them just where we want them. So.
The heat is on them when they do
there
this.
There is no doubt in my mind. He goes into that meeting today, and he is like, please, let me just have something that I can go back and pretend like I got for this. And it's going to be, it's
ATA
exactly
subsidies.
What they're saying. They want those subsidies. And the thing is, the Republicans need those. And it's just, it is literally like, please let me give you what you want.
Yes. So I can look like I'm doing anything.
Just insane.
I mean, it is kind of, it reminds me of the mafia state thing where you know, they don't need you anymore. Why do?
Right, right.
Oh, incidentally, during this government shutdown, Kirsten Gillibrand, the head of the Democratic Senate Campaign Committee, will be in a wine cave, I think in Sonoma Valley.
Oh, same one as
it's Kristen Sinema. I think I don't know. Wasn't she an intern there for a while? Like she went there and also interned while she was a senator.
I would love to intern at a wine cave.
And
and that's the only person who can't
bringing,
drink.
What's their favorite candidate in Michigan? What's her face?
Marge Simpson. Stevens.
Yes, yeah, Stevens.
Made out loud.
Apparently, Governor Mills, their favorite candidate in Maine, I think she might be too old to fly.
She's 78.
They worry.
She's older than Schumer.
They're concerned about her flying.
Yeah.
And so she will not be there.
Good, but a six-term term in the Senate, cakewalk.
Yeah.
Cakewalk.
Well, they'll drive her down. They won't. The altitude.
She'll get the John Madden tour bus.
Just insane.
Sorry.
Just such an incredible, exquisite failure of leadership. It's insane. What else should we go with here?
This Mockler is, I think, 16 around there.
Yeah, okay. Let's.
There's actually two parts. The second part is a follow-up of the longer, a 2:20 debate about who turned up the temperature in this country. We're all trying to find the person who did this.
Yeah, do we have that chart? Do we put that chart up? Oh, you know what we should start with is, do we have that that clip of Miller? Stephen Miller? I
believe that's under domestic.
Yeah, this is on Friday. Stephen Miller.
Talking about the executive order?
Yes. Yeah. Using the excuse of, I don't know, this is like part of the Reichstag Charlie Kirk thing. Stephen Miller is out there essentially starting a new task force. And Ken Klippenstein talked about this. And I think you spoke to him a little bit about where it was headed.
Yeah, this story, I think, broke maybe a few hours or a day later. But this is another enormous scoop that Ken has gotten.
This is National Security Presidential Memorandum 7. It's being referred to as NSPM 7. It is not an executive order. It is a directive. And it is not, unlike this week's designation of Antifa as a domestic terror organization.
And can I also say that this is interesting because Ken pointed out that you don't even fully need changes in classifications to dramatically change the way that police work at, say, like the FBI is oriented. You just have to lay out priorities and say which should be prioritizing, which should not be. And you can easily have this go into effect without there being some sort of formal classification of Antifa as domestic terror or whatever.
And as Klippenstein writes, it's hard to overstate how much different NSPM 7 is from over 200 executive orders Trump has signed since coming back into office. The NSPM 7, Countering Domestic Terrorism and Organized Political Violence, Trump directs the Justice Department, the FBI, and other national security agencies and departments to fight his version of political violence, retooling a network of joint terrorism task force to focus on leftist political violence in America. Here's Stephen Miller talking about it.
Steve, could you say a couple of words?
Yes, Mr. President. This is a very historic and significant day. This is the first time in American history that there is an all-of-government effort to dismantle left-wing terrorism, to dismantle Antifa, to dismantle the organizations that have been carrying out these acts of political violence and terrorism. What we have seen, if you look at whether it be going back to the riots, that started with Black Lives Matter and all the way through to the Antifa riots, the attacks on ICE officers, the doxing campaigns, and now the political assassinations. These are not lone, isolated events. This is part of an organized campaign of radical left terrorism. It is structured, it is sophisticated, it is well-funded, it is well-planned. There is really no
pause parallel like this anything. First of all, what, I mean, there's two things you need to absorb here. One, what the F is he talking about? These structured organizations that are well-funded and planned and like, I don't even know what events he's talking about. Never mind. There is no structure. There is no event. None of that. You had a lone gunman, at least to our knowledge at this point, who was raised in a very conservative family, was steeped in gun culture, was trained on just about every gun that you could handle with your hands or put on your shoulder. He was immersed in nihilist online communities. Here's him with a bazooka, for God's sakes.
Is this at one of the leftist training camps?
And
that'd be an AT-4
regardless, regardless of his personal sympathies to LGBT folks, his ideology is in no way indicative so far of leftism.
I also, and, yeah, I mean, he's also, but okay, go on.
But he is, the idea that he's part of some type of like paid infrastructure is absurd. So this is nuts, but understand it is so dangerous that this guy can sit up there, say this stuff in the president's office and direct this thing, which supposedly the NSPM7 says can be identified. That's organizations or groups or individuals or entities who can be identified by any of the following indicators of violence: anti-Americanism, anti-capitalism, anti-Christianity, support for the overthrow of the U.S. government, extremism on migration. I don't know what that means. Extremism on race. I don't know what that means. Extremism on gender. I don't know what that means. Hostility towards those who hold traditional American values on family. Hostility towards those who hold traditional American values on religion. Hostility towards those who hold traditional American views on morality. Quote, the United States requires a national strategy to investigate and disrupt networks, entities, organizations that foment political violence so that law enforcement can intervene in criminal conspiracies before they result in violent political acts.
Minority Report.
Total pre-crime stuff. Total pre-crime stuff. Continue.
It is sophisticated, it is well-funded, it is well-planned. There is really no parallel like this anything to anything else in the country right now. There is an entire system of feeder organizations that provide money, resources, weapons, and when they're attacking ICE officers, they're attacking federal buildings, or they're isolating public officials for harassment, doxing, intimidation, and ultimately attempted assassination, it is all carefully planned, executed, and thought through. It is terrorism on our soil. Because of this executive order, Cash and Pam are going to have the tools they need working with Scott to take these organizations apart piece by piece. And the central hub of that effort is going to be the Joint Terrorism Task Force, or JTTF, which sits inside the Federal Bureau of Investigation. But for those at home who are worried about terrorism in this country, they need to understand, because of President Trump's strength, because of his vision, because of his leadership, we are now going to use the entire force of the federal government to uproot these organizations root and branch. And again, that's only possible because of President Trump and his leadership.
Like,
I mean,
you go looking for this stuff that doesn't exist, you're going to find something.
It's just, first of all, it's ahistorical to say that the government hasn't tried to target left-wing organizations in its history.
He's just rerunning Roy Cohn.
But it's all like they're trying to, I guess, redo COINTELPRO, or I mean, merge it with the immigration and ICE Gestapo that they've funded. But this wasn't, they tried this to less effectiveness in the first term. If you recall, there was a story back on and in Trump 1.0 when the FBI created a new category of domestic terrorism called black identity extremism. Do you remember that from 2017?
Vaguely.
Yeah. And they ended up expanding upon that in 2018 and 2019. This is from Brennan Center and The Guardian together. The FBI conducted nationwide assessments of black identity extremists under an intelligence collection operation it called Iron Fist, prioritizing these cases over investigations into far more prevalent violence from white supremacists and far-right militants over that period, including mass shootings at a Pittsburgh synagogue and an El Paso shopping mall. And we had Trevor Aronson on this show, and people can listen to his podcast about his investigative reporting on the undercover FBI agents that infiltrated Black Lives Matter in 2020. They are just going to try to expand upon that in multitudes. And they're not reserving it to just, of course, the movement to against police brutality and for Black lives. He said it there fully, that it's a complex network. The idea that the left is as organized is as it was, say, in like the 60s or the 50s, I mean, it's just hilarious.
Wasn't it supposed to be about deconstructing all of these financial networks? Didn't he do that already?
He was supposed to, but it's just, it is, it, because they're creating a pretext without any of the, any real, you know, equivalent groups in mind, because they want to target the speech of even shows like ours or whatever. I mean, we would clearly fall under that kind of category if that's what they're and, how broad it is.
And look at this. This is the study of somehow they put out this stuff. Left-wing terrorism climbs to a 30-year high in, and it's really only relative to right-wing
and this is the White House
violence. And this is the, let's just stipulate that this is true for a moment, which, of course, this is put out by the Trump administration.
White House Deputy Press Secretary Abigail Johnson.
It's put out by her, but even with her own numbers, if you look at this, all the gray is right-wing violence.
Right.
And it's massively been going up lately.
And it's been going, like, it's just, and it must be relative to right-wing violence only through this year and as measured by the Trump administration. Like, to put this out as a graph is just fascinating.
Because even
the yellow's on top, though.
Yeah.
What's that?
Yeah.
Yellow's on top.
Oh.
This time.
You take responsibility for all the right-wing violence in the gray.
Right.
It is literally like, okay, this is what we'll do. The right-wing violence, what's a color that is muted? Let's do that. And then we'll put a bright color for the left-wing, and nobody's going to notice. We're just going to put it out anyways.
You look like a French manicure.
That's so true.
So ridiculous.
I'm trying to find who put this study, Center for Strategic and International Studies. That's establishment. Yeah. I mean, it's just you can't trust that the government is classifying these incidents as left-wing terrorism correctly.
I would also argue that we have some right-wing violence. Let's show this. This is clip number... this is number 7. Watch these ICE guys. The way that they're doing, I don't even know, I would call this crowd control. This is, these ICE guys have tackled a protester, and to keep people from getting too close and taking photos of what they're doing, they start firing these pepper bullets at the ground around them. Watch this. This is just insane. You see that guy firing that stuff?
Right in front of the cameras.
Get They're pepper bullets. They're like the pepper packets. They leave pretty big welts. Look at all those new ICE uniforms. And none of those guys can fit into them. Not exactly the high, like, their boot camp is not exactly intense, it looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Shove them into the unmarked Buick.
These assholes are the heroes.
I mean, he had a noticeable welt on his head.
It's insane.
I mean, in any just world, we would have, like, major lawsuits against these ICE agents. I mean, they shouldn't exist, but they're flooding the zone on purpose.
Well, this is what right-wing militia looks like in Central America 30 years ago. I mean, obviously, their gear is a little bit more updated, but it's the exact same look.
Myanmar.
And why do we have these guys in camo and in militarized uniforms, then hopping into these like unmarked Buick town and countries or whatever they are? This is like,
and we're just getting started.
We're there.
We're just getting started because they're just starting to implement the insane budget that ICE just got in the spring. I think, like, they really started in the fall. There's some, like, rolling wonky budgetary reasons. It had to take a second. The fiscal year's starting in October, but they still could have used some of the funds. Either way, the bulk of it is still yet to come.
This is a good story. Let's do number five. In light of how the FBI has just been recruited into essentially patrolling cities, harassing citizens, harassing legal immigrants, harassing undocumented immigrants, all of it. Charles Tillman,
he played for the Bears. I remember he was always like a recipient or in the running for Walter Payton Man of the Year. So very much like a
perennial all pro,
a perennial all pro, but also, you know, seen by the league as like contributing to society in a positive way. You know, great player. Did he go to the Super Bowl with that Bears team?
Yep.
Yeah.
Against the Colts.
The Colts won that one. I guess after his career was over, he ended up joining the FBI. Perhaps it was a little bit, I don't know. I had wanted to do public service.
Yeah, exactly what it was. He's like, I'm a big, strong guy. I retire. I had a job that let me retire in my 30s. Now, what am I going to do with my life? Right. Oh, let's go use my strength for good. And
he's a military brat. He just a little naive.
So it's interesting to see his journey here. He ended up quitting the FBI in response to the Trump administration's actions. Here he is explaining on Ryan Clark's show why he did that.
We're also continuing to be
Matt mode.
The man you know you are is important as well.
So one of the reasons, let me start off by saying this. FBI was great to me. I did awesome. I worked with an amazing group of individuals. I think what some of the things that they're doing now, I personally didn't agree with.
Like, and what?
Immigration. Like, I didn't agree with how the administration came in and tried to make individuals do things against their, it didn't sit right. An example being immigration, right? Everybody was told you're going to go after like the most dangerous criminals. But what you see on TV and what actually was happening is like people weren't going after that, you know? And personally, that didn't sit right with me. That didn't sit right with my conscience. Like, you have the ability to refuse an order. Like, just because they say go arrest this person, like, okay, yeah, you're my superior. Like, I don't have to go do that. You can't make me go do that. you know, I'm not in the military. You gave me an order, but I can totally refuse that order. Mm. At the end of the day, I want to be on the right side of history when it's all said and done. Do I think they're individuals in the organization? Do they like doing some of the stuff that they're doing? Absolutely not. I think they hate it. I think I was in a different position because of my previous career. I made enough money to where I could just walk away and say, you know what, guys? I'm okay. I think I'm good. You know, my first 8 years, I've been solid. We were doing some good things. Some of the stuff that you guys are doing now, I don't necessarily agree with. And that's not in Chicago. That comes from Washington. And I left in good terms with people and my friends. And I don't have like a sour taste or bitter taste in my mouth about the FBI. I learned a lot. They taught me a good skill. And I was looking at the Obama.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the dynamic that we have a lot of people, I suspect, who are in these agencies, regardless what agency it is. I'm not even talking in the context of like sort of ICE adjacent. You know, people are broke. People are afraid that they can't make money afterwards. I mean,
they got mortgages.
If you're a billionaire out there, you want to do something good, I would give bonuses for people leaving these jobs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he did leave it. And he mentions, right, as you said, that he had the ability because he made a lot of money over the course of his career. But it's part of what's so scary about this ICE recruitment. They're borrowing from some of the worst fascistic regimes in history, where they are creating a situation where it's fairly generous, the bonuses, the student debt forgiveness
yep.
that they're talking about, which a lot creates a buy-in to a fascist project that they need, especially if the economy collapses and it's one of the only ways that people can make money. And you're going to have folks that say, like, I'm desperate. I need a $50,000 bonus. This is a good ICE salary. I'll do my best. And that's what the administration's relying on. And I think there's it's going to work, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you saw it like during the Iraq War. They were really desperate for recruits in like 05, 06,
mm-hmm.
07. And then financial crisis, you never heard another word about desperate for recruits again.
Right, because that's when they were talking with this whole National Guard's conversation surrounding Tim Walz in the race. That was when the Bush administration, right, was talking about sending the National Guard to Iraq, and that was met with a lot of controversy. That's how desperate they were. Now we're sending the National Guard on our own citizens.
I'd also say 99% of the people and 100% of the people who argue against it in print against student loan debt on the liberal side of things contribute to this and probably don't care about the fact that it's being used for this reason. Like, of course, this should have been taken care of. Of course, this puts people in a position. But some people at the top of our economy and political system love people being put in that position so they can manipulate them.
Well, they're okay with student debt being used as a way to funnel folks into jobs like serving corporations.
They want it.
Right? That's actually the function of it, as you're saying, Matt. Debt is like people's immigration status is a way to keep a workforce in check. You need this job. It's white collar. It's also like day laborer from all the way down. I mean, it's part of when you have an analysis of capitalism about people who own the means of production and the people that are really running the economy, you can see that we all are kind of in it together, where there's different levers, whether it's via college debt or whether it's, you know, we'll get you deported if you speak up in the workplace, that keep people in certain lanes.
I mean, this is a piece everyone should read. The origins of student debt. The Reagan advisor warned free college would educate a dangerous, quote, educated proletariat. You can go check out that. But it's also like, this has been a long-term project, and I don't appreciate people like Ezra Klein trying to start the clock at like 2015 or whatever he did with Ta-Nehisi Coates. Like, get a little bit wide. I know you're allergic to history. Get a little bit wider in scale, because this has been going on even at a point where there could have been something done about
except
it.
Except for the problem is that he was an active player from 04 to 2015. And so if the clock doesn't start at 2015, you start to ask, like, hey, what were you doing?
Right.
Yeah, did you fail?
October 7th math.
Right.
Sachs Repair. I know you guys have addressed this before, but wanted to ask again, at what point should people start get trained up on firearms? Look, I didn't like it.
Category error. This is not the place to be doing this.
Well, also, I would first off, I would tell you that the idea that if we get any positive outcome that comes in the future is going to be a function of some type of like military conflict within this country, I would say is a very bad understanding. The way that we get through this, regardless of how authoritarian the Trump administration comes, is not going to be through, like, you know, partisan militias. No, I'm sorry. I mean, that's a fun sort of idea, like very romantic.
Maybe you saw a movie this weekend.
Like, you know, you're going to fight against Vichy France and whatnot by being part of the partisans who live in the woods and come down. And no, it is going to be coming from organizing and essentially full-on people power that decide to withhold their labor, decide to withhold their payments, decide to literally put their bodies on the line. It is not going to be a function of like the center to the left picking up arms. I can assure you there's not going to be enough of weapons, people, or whatnot in that scenario.
Yeah, I have no problem with people saying, like, especially in gun states, like, I want a gun for self-protection. I think you should not delude yourself over how effective that's going to be. But I will say I absolutely have no interest in encouraging someone who would not have otherwise picked up a gun to pick up a gun because they heard a podcaster say so. It's just not appropriate. It's not appropriate place to be talking about that kind of stuff.
Doug from KC Mo, cancel all student debt. If you understood MMT, you know that canceling all student debt would be great for the economy, working people live. You don't have to know MMT to know that canceling student debt would be great for the economy. As early as 2016, I think it was, or the head of the U.S. Builders Association said the number one drag on building new homes was debt held by young people. You don't need to know MMT to understand that concept.
Yeah, that's not why we don't have student loan debt forgiveness. It's for the reasons of political control that we've been discussing, which is actually a huge part missing, in my opinion, from the MMT conversation.
And also the banks are in on it too.
What's this? And so here is what's the guy's name? Mockler?
Adam Mockler, I guess he's of the Midas touch. I've never really seen him
before.
Yeah,
he's a young guy. He's 22 years old. He does a good job on this show. Yeah. I've seen him a couple of times. And here he is addressing essentially what appears to be the administration ramping up, try and justify going after leftists, which is essentially, you know, half the country, according to them.
And I guess Scott Jennings, shocker, the resident Trump defender, like, it is the one on the other side of this. Do people enjoy having someone who's clearly paid to represent a certain perspective just be there as a heel for everybody?
My understanding is he is hated by the CNN audience.
Right.
But he's under contract.
But he's on staff there to be the Trump guy, and it's just such a farce.
I think they'd get rid of him, frankly, if he wasn't under contract.
Right here.
Yeah, I'm pretty tired of conservatives gaslighting about the current political environment and Donald Trump's rhetoric when
All of this escalation can be traced back to his entrance into American politics. His claim to fame was saying that Obama wasn't born in America. He was the first presidential candidate to have his crowd chant, "Lock her up," about a political opponent. You can bring up the insurrection. Even in the past few weeks, my home city of Chicago, he posted a photo of Chicago being invaded by the Department of War. So the broader point here is Donald Trump endlessly deflects and tries to blame it on the other side when he is the one responsible for amping up the tension in America. And I've spent all of my formative years throughout high school, throughout college, looking to the president, who I'm supposed to be able to look up to, and seeing somebody who's trying to place blame on the left, who's amping up the rhetoric constantly. And yeah, it's not good.
So you think it's Donald Trump's fault that a deranged leftist climbed up to the top of a building and shot up the ICE facility, not once now, but twice in Texas?
I think it's Donald Trump's fault that America has gotten to this heated place. I think that
No responsibility for the radicalization on the left that's causing this violent
outburst. That 29-year-old is radicalized by online communities and online algorithms. I'm not going to blame that directly on Trump. But he was caught in a lot of online video game algorithms and all these communities. Donald Trump,
but it's Trump's
10
fault.
Years ago, Donald Trump amped up the tension in America.
Ran 10 years ago, and this guy then 10 years later, somehow you're connecting. Can't you just take responsibility for it?
I love how Jennings like starts to describe, like, so you're saying an environment of violence. Okay, never mind that.
Can't you just take responsibility?
Can we not get into the idea of, like, there's... Because he realizes that he is discounting the argument that he's trying to make to Mockler, right? Like, he's trying to say, like, the leftist environment that you're creating. But wait a second. So your claim is that there's a... never mind.
The left as opposed to the guy who has been president twice.
Right.
Let's not do the, like, he has to take responsibility because he's a Democrat.
I'm a 22-year-old YouTuber. You want me to take more responsibility than the president of the United States?
I want you to understand.
I'm a 22-year-old YouTuber.
I want you to understand that we are in the middle of an epidemic of left-wing violence. They're attacking ICE. They shot Charlie. It's happening all over the country.
They shot Charlie. They shot Charlie.
So
they did not do anything. An individual, and I'm not saying that it was because he was raised with conservative values. I'm not saying that conservative families turn out those type of people. It's just an individual. I'm sure that there is a world where there is a left-wing family that trains people with guns, and somebody could come out to commit a political assassination. That's not the case in this instance. It was a right-wing family that trained him to use guns over and over again. Then he fell in with video games. And the distance between shooting those guns ever since he was a small child, shooting a bazooka, killing a bunch of stuff along the way, animals, and the video games... That distance became shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter until, like, what was unimaginable for most people became more than imaginable for this guy. But there is no they there. The idea that they want to blame the they on this is just absurd.
It was just a little bit later in the segment where another person basically backs up Adam's point, and Scott's still salty about it.
And I think at the same time.
So now we have two people here who are saying it's Donald Trump's fault that someone shot up an ICE facility.
Nobody said that. Listen, let me finish.
And then you agreed with it.
You want to know what I said? I said Donald Trump created this environment over the past decade. You sat here and said, I need to take responsibility. I'm a 22-year-old YouTuber. You hold me to a higher standard than the man that
I'm
we
holding
just
you to your
to.
Standard of your punditry.
Donald
your
Trump
punditry
was just
is that
vomiting
Trump's
vitriol
fault.
Out of his mouth about how the other party is weak and evil. And he just said, the party of hate, evil, and Satan. You blind yourself to that. And you're focusing on a 22-year-old YouTuber.
Since I've been in politics.
God.
That's well said.
I mean, yeah, well done. And Scott Jennings got pants by a 22-year-old on national TV. But, like, I don't... It's so simulated that he knows he's lying. Everyone knows he's lying. And it's just like, I don't... What is the value in this? It's performance art. It's completely empty calories except to further... I don't know, the Trump fascistic agenda, and CNN's terrified of being sued or something, so they have to have a mouthpiece on set. I don't really get what it is, but I don't see what the value in it is.
Well, let's get Jillian Michaels in here to talk slavery next.
And Trump, like, I'm really not trying to live out about it, but he has had a corrosive element on our culture. Like, I mean,
you think?
We're mostly focused, I think, on material conditions here.
Somebody's bleeding from everywhere again.
Yes, that's what I'm bringing here. But like. But the lack of leadership, it matters. It makes it so that people are less tethered to the truth. There's this nihilism where nothing means anything. People's words and actions have no meaning. There's no accountability. It's reflected on the international stage. It's not just Trump, of course. I think, you know, the pandemic accelerated this and the failures of liberalism. But man, like, what happened to civic duty and values and honesty? It's a wonderful life over here, but God, can we have some of that earnestness back?
You're talking like a four.
Yeah. Oh, please. Even Trump wouldn't say that. Sorry.
Well, you're talking like a four.
We got a lot of stuff.
There's some new healthcare news.
Can we do? Yeah.
I don't know what this
Please,
is.
Please, can I fill you in on this?
Well, we got beat to single payer.
So, med beds are apparently, I was reading up on this morning, a conspiracy theory in the QAnon community, or at the very least, it's been like AI generated misinformation that has spread amongst the internet slop.
Med beds.
Brain poisoned MAGA world.
Truth seekers.
So now people are very anxious about their health care. We talked about this in the context of RFK Jr., what he exploits. People want to feel like they're in control of their health care because we have a for-profit system that extracts and kills people and literally lowers our life expectancy in this country. So people are primed to believe something like this. Apparently, even the president. So there are two options here. One, Trump knows that he doesn't have this magical med bed technology that looks like a tanning bed.
But wait, what is
that can
med
fix
bed?
Everything?
Okay, it's a medical bed.
It's a theory that they are. It's a conspiracy theory about a potential technology that can cure everything up front to asthma to broken bones. Which, by the way, China is apparently coming up with a glue and working on it that could actually fix broken bones. But regardless, regrow limbs, they think, and cure cancer. And Trump tweeted out a video, video of him.
Don't they have? I've seen like sci-fi movies where that does
right.
exist.
Yes, but not in. But in the real world, it might exist if, you know, President Trump will bestow it upon us. Because apparently, instead of focusing on things like Medicare for All, this cohort of like, I don't know, lead brain poison Trump supporters are more like content with being fooled by AI slop that makes it seem like eventually my healthcare problems will be solved.
The basic idea is that we don't need pharma anymore because we have these fancy beds that can just fix everything.
Sure.
You do. He's going to release these.
Well,
so they're in development. Area 51 stuff.
We're on the corner. And,
okay.
I mean, looks like
and
it might
so,
be even closer.
And so they're deploying Lara Trump to come out and talk about...
No, it's AI. Trump shared this. This is not a real video. Trump shared this. It's a fake Fox News segment about these med beds where he's in it. And there's two options. Either he was fooled
Wouldn't
by it.
Wouldn't this be great news?
Yeah.
Wait, did I record this?
Right. There's two options.
All right, let's
He's
watch
fooled
it.
By
let's
it.
Watch it,
okay.
And then you can explain
or,
what I'm almost...
Listen to how clear Trump sounds.
Breaking now. President Donald J. Trump has announced a historic new healthcare system, the launch of America's first MedBed hospitals, and a national MedBed card for every citizen.
Every American will soon receive their own MedBed card. With it, you'll have guaranteed access to our new hospitals led by the top doctors in the nation, equipped with the most advanced technology in the world. These facilities are safe, modern, and designed to restore every citizen to full health and strength. This is the beginning of a new era in American healthcare.
In this first phase, only a limited number of MedBed cards will be released. Registration details will be announced very soon.
This is insane. And so, wait, is that Lara Trump?
It's AI. It's all AI.
No, I know. I understand. But
that's Lara Trump.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
So, and he retweeted this.
Posted it.
Is he thinking like, I don't remember doing this, but this is good.
Right.
Or it's just, oh, Laura did another segment. I guess I'll retweet it.
There are two options.
Well, there's
either
one other option.
He's dementia brain, you know, doesn't remember anything, or he knows he's lying and doesn't care. Right?
Oh, he could just think, that's fun. That'd be fun. And so...
Yeah. No, it says we're going to distribute cards for people to be able to... your ailments. Don't worry about your cancer.
We didn't say when.
Yeah.
We will. It's just going to be in 100 years.
It's just... This is... I know that we turn everything into the Democrats, but this is really a failure of the Democrats. This is a failure of the Democrats, okay? Well, because if we had a Medicare for All agenda, people would be actually talking about healthcare, and you wouldn't have this grifter lunatic... Like saying, I'm going to send out special cards to cure your cancer. Don't worry about it bankrupting your family, and have some boomers on the internet, I'm sorry, who maybe aren't that literate about this kind of thing, being like, oh, it's happening. It's right around the corner. All my problems will be solved. Just vote Republican another term and another one and another one.
It's not just in the context of healthcare. I mean, the Democrats have refused. Over the course of the past 9-10 months, I mean, you could argue before then, but certainly over the past, during the Trump administration 2.0, to come out with any policy statements on anything.
Yeah.
Like, what is the Democratic policy on immigration? I know... 2 years ago, Joe Biden offered up some legislation, which, of course, nobody can articulate what was in that legislation.
Yeah.
I understand comprehensive immigration reform. What is the outside? Like, the right can articulate what their immigration is. End it. Deport everyone. But the Democrats have nothing to, they're not, by design. What is the answer to healthcare? They have no stated policy. And just as a political matter, there has absolutely been zero attempt to offer another vision. And both as a policy and political matter, first off, there is no way things revert. We do not have the agencies, the funding to rebuild the what Humpty Dumpty has destroyed and will continue to destroy. And there has to be an aggressive, like proactive, stated, articulable agenda by the Democrats. Play this. We were saying 3 weeks ago, Democrats should come out with a farm bailout to make Americans aware of the fact that Trump is killing farms. Just as a political matter, this is a good idea. That's the way you come out, own it. If the Trump administration ends up doing a farmer's bailout, then Democrats will get credit. Trump will look like he's following the Democratic lead, but nothing, not a word. And just, it was so inevitable. Here is Thune. And to be clear, you could also criticize the bailout for Argentina if you've been calling for a bailout for farmers. You can talk about how tariffs are hurting the economy if you talk about why a bailout needed for farmers. You can talk about bailouts for other people who may need it. The American citizen, middle-class America, whatever it is that they wanted to say. There's no political leadership in the Democratic Party right now. Here's Thune.
Why should American taxpayers bail out farmers who are hurting because of the president's tariff policies?
Well, look, I think that the farmers, and I represent a lot of them, and they want nothing more than open markets. There are markets right now that aren't open to some of our commodities. As a consequence of that, we've got a big harvest coming in here in South Dakota, corn and soybeans, and no place to go with it. So what the president has said is, I'm going to support and I'm going to help our farmers. And so we are looking at, I'm a member of the Senate Ag Committee, have been for some time, and we're looking at potential solutions to make sure that we can help support farmers until some of those markets come back. I think part of it is that the president's trying to achieve with his trade policy reciprocity with countries that have been taking advantage of us for a long time. And I think most of us support that. I think a lot of our farmers support that. They are anxious. They want to see markets opened up. And so when I speak to the president and his team about this, I always reiterate the importance of keeping agriculture front and center when you're negotiating trade deals. But at the end of the day, our farmers are probably going to need some financial assistance this year, and a lot of the revenue coming in off the tariffs is what they would use to provide that.
But later soon, why not?
Because the Democrats did not get out in front of this, Thune can come on there and pretend like this is just sort of like because markets have been closed off for them, people stop buying because from this country, because of all the trade wars. Put this graph up. Guess what's not coming back? Guess what's not coming back? It's not like China has decided we don't need soybeans anymore. It is, they've decided we're just going to find somewhere else to buy them from.
Yep. Soybeans had been the single largest American exporter to China, $12.6 billion worth last year. Now take a look at this chart. Here it is. U.S. soybean sales to China, you see, it's just basically, at the end of May, completely ceased. Completely ceased. At the idea that this is going to be made up for farmers in the form of tariffs is a fantasy.
Well, we're just going to keep and you can be sure who's going to get that money.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to crush the small farmers. It's going to be, we're all corporate farmers are going to be the ones that survive this.
That's it. We're going to give the money to the farmers, small print, big corporations.
Which is amazing because Republicans my whole life have been talking about being the party of small business, but with this regime, they are working to wipe out small businesses and further corporate consolidation, whether it be TV, local TV conglomerates, and what Nexstar is trying to do to blow past the, you know, sub 40% market share threshold that the FCC already had in place, like, which is already way too monopolistic. They want to have 80% of the market, and the Trump administration would give it to them if they just capitulate. It's going to happen across the board. Mergers getting approved. We are seeing this with Paramount. We will see more. This is fascism. It's big business merging with the state.
This is actually the business in the state merging, and not, you know, when Biden said, hey, guys, be responsible with these giant media platforms that you have with how you let the algorithm deal with COVID, for instance.
Yeah.
Okay, let's play number 10. News in New York City. We are about... not even 6 weeks away from the New York mayoral race, which Bibi Netanyahu attorney Andrew Cuomo is challenging Zohran Mamdani.
Mm-hmm.
This is number 10, and there's news. Eric Adams, who cut a deal with Donald Trump to not have his criminal charges pursued. We're not quite sure what Eric Adams provided, but he has dropped out of the race. We don't know what real estate developer is going to be hiring him, mm-hmm. Ostensibly for a no-show job. But here is Zohran Mamdani's reaction to Eric Adams dropping out of the race.
Today, Eric Adams announced he won't be running for re-election. 4 years ago, he ran on a promise to working-class New Yorkers to deliver both safety and justice, to bring the voices of the outer boroughs into City Hall. Instead, he raised their rents, slowed their buses, and cut funding for their schools, libraries, and childcare, a city that was already hard has become nearly impossible for those who call it home. But a new day is coming. Over the past year, tens of thousands of you have built the biggest grassroots campaign our city has ever seen. You have knocked on millions of doors, all to make the city affordable. In just over 5 weeks, we will turn the page on the politics of big money and small ideas and deliver a government every New Yorker can be proud of. And to Andrew Cuomo, you got your wish. You wanted Trump and your billionaire friends to help you clear the field. But don't forget, you wanted me as your opponent in the primary too. And we beat you by 13 points. Looking forward to doing it again on November 4th. Hope you're well.
So now the race is just down to Curtis Sliwa, Andrew Cuomo, and Zohran Mamdani. And Hakeem Jeffries finally took the opportunity with Eric Adams dropping out to make an endorsement.
Finally.
Finally.
Because we want the Democrat that's opposing the candidate Trump supports, right? We are the opposition party, and Trump is a really scary figure right now trying to implement fascism in the country, and we want to be as opposed to him as possible. United front, vote blue no matter who.
And Hakeem Jeffries put out a statement with Eric Adams now out of the race, enthusiastically endorsing the work of Eric Adams. Oh, that's weird.
Something simple as a crack pipe, a used crack pipe.
Eric Adams has served courageously and authentically for decades as a member
service.
Of the NYPD, the New York State Senate, in Brooklyn Borough Hall, and as our 110th mayor. Understand, the list of criminal charges against Eric Adams before Donald Trump intervened as a way of blackmailing him was extensive. This guy was like getting free trips to go to Turkey. I mean, on and on and on. During his time in office, violent crime is down. The building of affordable housing units is up, and New York City's recovered from the COVID-19 pandemic. There were changes, blah, blah, blah. Over the next few days, my entire focus will be on addressing the Republican healthcare crisis and funding the government. I will publicly weigh in with respect to the remaining candidates in the mayor's race well before the start of early voting. Who gives an F?
You're irrelevant. Yeah.
This is such a failure. Again. Why did Jeffries even need to put out a statement? We will have a program on this show where like half days off to go work on whoever runs against Hakeem Jeffries in his primary.
Credit to Eric Adams though, he ran quite a scam. I mean, he's still on the ballot. He got paid to drop out.
Yes.
He's as crooked as you can get.
Yeah.
Nothing but net.
Hey, listen. If there's anybody who knows how to do this, it's Eric Adams.
I mean, I have a pretty good sense that he'll find a home in Turkey if he really needs to go somewhere.
He needs hair.
Yeah.
He's gonna be living quite well. You know he went out at peak... Whatever he got paid for, I mean, he's done himself well.
Matt's gonna say that louder.
What was it?
That he comes back from Turkey with a giant afro.
Turkey is where men go for hair transplants.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. You would know, asshole.
Yeah. Fuck you.
I'm not. Sorry.
Yeah. Nutrafol.
Nutrafol. Some people need a little more help.
Tyworm, all those free trips to Turkey and still bald.
He does have the power shave, though. I don't think I would want to live in a world where Eric Adams has hair.
Slightly haired, like Walter Goggins. Okay.
BC Trumpet was going crazy on Friday when Jeet was on, ripped down every smoke detector. Sim.
Respect to Jeet. I don't know how he got through that.
Clem, Trump is selling effing Bacta tanks from Star Wars. Oh, Bacta tanks. Yeah, that's what it is. Chuck Schumer. I've been asking for a meeting with Donald Trump and Mike Johnson to discuss the budget for weeks. They finally had me meet with them at a veterinarian clinic here in Washington, D.C. The next thing I know, I'm waking up groggy blur after being sedated with a cone over my head. They appear to have cut off my testicles. I have asked the Trump administration in very strongly worded letter if I could have them back. They have not gotten back to me as of now, but I assure you I will not be endorsing Mamdani anytime soon. You enjoy my socialism. It's a great day to be a waiter at Adam's Table of Success. MJS, Sam, did you see Atlantic's piece about how for the first time in 40 years, left-wing violence has outpaced right-wing violence? It was based on a poor reading of very flimsy data and seemed tailor-made to validate this lunatic Stephen Miller's crusade. Mm. I have no doubt.
He's basically the president, by the way.
Tomo Flink. Happy Fun Day Monday, folks. Here in Britain, Jeremy Corbyn's and Zara Sultana's new party appears to be in the toilet. I don't think I've ever seen such an embarrassing S show. Also, Emma, don't apologize for enjoying yourself at the Chapel Roan show. I was the same that? When I went to my fourth Iron Maiden show in June. Also, England won the Women's Rugby World Cup on the weekend, defeating Canada. Shtick, if you're into video games, EA has reportedly been taken private by the Saudis in Kushner-backed investment company. Popeye, I'm up here all the time, similar to the Oxford shooting, super close to home. I don't get it. Jamie from the UK. Hi, Sam, Emma, Matt, and Brian. I hope that his brainworm would have finished eating his brain by now, so I didn't have to send an IM about this. But sadly, RFK is still around. I wanted to ask if it would be okay if the team could avoid doing impressions of his voice. This is because as a divergent, i.e. disabled, though I discourage that term, person, it's unfortunately divergence to do impression of a divergent's voice, though I know this wasn't your intention. Regardless, love the show and left his best. Well, I do an impression of Chuck Schumer's voice, and it's RFK's voice. We're not doing an impression of his voice any more than I'm doing an impression of Trump because of his voice or Chuck Schumer because of his voice. It is because if I said I'm going to go and eat bear carcass and then take a testosterone shot in my buttock as a way of looking like I'm, you know, a He-Man, you would not know I was doing RFK Jr. or a bit about it. So I understand how people could be sensitive to that, and I'm trying to respect that, but this is not, I'm not doing a disabled person. I'm doing RFK Jr., who happens to have a degenerative disease of his vocal cords.
Yes. Member of a royal family, essentially.
Yeah.
So please take it in those ways.
And frankly, RFK doesn't show the same respect to people with disabilities across the country. He treats them with like open disdain, disgust, and disrespect. And
basically a eugenicist.
Yeah. He's bringing back like pre-World War II levels of eugenicism. So we're just trying to mock him to take him down.
Yeah, I mean, broadly speaking, that's like the... policy that we have on mocking people.
Yeah, as in we do it.
Yeah.
Trilly Flop, Sam, as a New England specifically from Mass, I've never heard you talk about the Big E. It just ended yesterday. When was the last time you went? What is your go-to food? I never went to the Big E. I never even really heard about it.
Hmm.
I don't know what the Big E is.
Premier Exposition and World's Only Multi-State Fair, representing all six New England states.
I never even heard about that.
Hmm.
The Eastern States Exposition.
It's never heard of it. I don't need to do that.
I was fist fighting in the old port. I was busy.
Was that in the parking lot of the Friendlies? Because I don't remember it.
West Springfield, Mass.
You know, I ain't going to Springfield.
Was Friendlies bought up by private equity, or am I imagining that?
It's a good bet.
Because I feel like a lot of them, a lot of them were bought out by private equity, but that's sad.
I don't remember.
If you're going to Springfield, just go to the Basketball Hall of Fame.
It's
got to be better.
Why am I going to Springfield? I grew up in Worcester. I don't need to go to see a worse version of Worcester. Krusty Gnome, they know MAGA can't read graphs, so they can put out whatever they want. Hogtown, did you guys see the video of the U.S. border guard yelling at the Canadian couple to never come back to the U.S.? Made news here, but it was wild. Did not see it. Inspector Runo, is that the royalty-free Benny Hill stock music? Yes, it's exactly what
nice
it was.
Nice catch.
Can't make that mistake again.
Ricky, must have been an electric bike.
That's an impression maybe of the Ice Age.
Exactly. Yeah. Eric in Poland. The main reason I don't want AOC to run for president in 2028 is I want her to primary Schumer.
Yeah. I mean, I think she'd be a phenomenal senator, but we'll see.
John Tiberg, DoorDash is very sorry as your driver was not at all momentarily delayed by absolutely punking the crack of Mayo Gestapo.
That's what's so sick is these freaks are ordering DoorDash in D.C. like nobody's business.
Yeah.
I mean, Kava Beg Homan over here.
Yeah.
Well, that was because I was $55.
I'm sorry, you should get a double chicken.
What number is that? What is that? This is a big deal because we saw what was going on in Michigan with the protests. Where I think it was Rashida Tlaib accused the Michigan AG of working with the University of Michigan to punish protesters for essentially nothing but protest. And she accused Nestle of working with members, I think it was of the board of the school's board trustees of working with them because they had an agenda that was at the very least influenced by AIPAC. So there is within Michigan politics a strain, particularly in the Democratic Party, that feels like they need to kowtow to AIPAC. Well, here is Garland Gilchrist. He is running for governor in Michigan. And just speaking, I guess, Friday?
Yeah, at the ArabCon. He's the current lieutenant governor.
The Netanyahu government is committing a genocide on the Palestinian people. This is not a matter of opinion. This is a matter of fact. This has been established by the global leaders who study genocide. This is not something that we should support. American taxpayer dollars should not fund offensive weapons of war while children are starving, while medical resources are being blocked to civilians, and while lineages of families are being erased. And look, candidates should not accept money from those who support the genocide. And that is why, as a candidate for governor of the state of Michigan, I will not accept money from AIPAC.
That's awesome.
And, you know, I don't know his politics very well, but this is more indicative of a story about the growing divide between AIPAC's ability to influence Democratic politicians. And this has been clear. This has been happening for 10 years, and it has accelerated. We hear more and more backbenchers in the Democratic Party refusing AIPAC money. He calls it out as a genocide. He also says Netanyahu's government, as opposed to Israel as a country, which is, you know, a way, I think, of like walking some type of line. Nevertheless, this creating an environment where Democratic lawmakers, politicians know that taking AIPAC money, being supportive of Israel getting weapons and funding from this country, never mind what they're doing, like just the active participation that the that America is involved in is toxic for them. The more they understand that, the more they understand they cannot, you know, Chuck Schumer is going to go down with the ship, as it were. But a lot of Democratic politicians are going to realize it is better now to get into the life raft and let this thing sink.
And this is not the only lieutenant governor who is primarying a sitting governor to the left. We have Delgado here in New York. And I think it's a really interesting dynamic, too, that each of these primary challenges are people who worked underneath the governor and have some understanding of the party, but feel that there's a lane for them to break.
Yeah.
And just to be clear on this one, I think Whitmer is term limited out. Is that
oh, I'm
correct?
Sorry.
So, and this is actually, this is her running mate. So he ran with Whitmer, but I mean, to see, which makes, like, he's fairly establishment guy, I think, to come out and say no other candidate should be taking AIPAC money too is
yes.
Wild.
I forgot she was term limited out. Thanks, Matt.
Augie's left paw. Michigander here. Reminder that Michigan has had 14 Republican trifectas of state government to the Dems' two trifectas of state government up until they had an independent redistricting board. Once that happened, we saw Dems win more. So I would historically consider Michigan a red state at a state level. Nick, what a world we live in when there's any scenario where uttering the word genocide leads to an uproarious applause. Yeah, that's where we are.
Yep.
Andrew Wogfield, did Netanyahu ask Adams to drop out of their meeting this weekend? I just find it hard to believe that Netanyahu would be that concerned.
He's so online, though. I mean, I don't know. And also, Mamdani says he's going to arrest him if he sets foot in New York City.
I guess that's true.
And, you know, they want his son is living down in Miami. They want to be vacationing.
Also, doesn't Eric want to live in like Tel Aviv? Didn't he say he wanted to retire to Tel Aviv or something like that?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I'm sure that was earnest.
Yes.
Let's follow up in 10 years.
I've actually made some other plans.
I mean, he's a very authentic guy.
Yeah.
Love the authenticity of people who do scams.
But isn't that? But he's using the code word for Trump to describe Adams. Jeffries was led authentically, meaning you lied a lot, but you just said what was on your mind.
Right.
Cool.
Tells it like it is.
Do you remember that thing, like, where somebody asked him, like, what makes New York special or something? And he's like, well, you could wake up one day, planes could hit some towers, or you could find a good place to get a Brazilian barbecue. Something like that.
It really was amazing.
That's my thought process every day.
I also like people joking because he waged a war on rats, and I guess the rats won against Adams, right? Sad.
All right. Five IMs, and then we're out of here. Scary Carrie. Chuck is going to move the line when they go over the line. That's true.
So they're not so far over it. They're just a little bit over it.
I thought they were going to go a little over it. And then I moved it. And it turns out they're barely over it. They're really bumping up against it. This is the thing about the line. You can't find a line that stays in place. They move.
They move based on how Schumer's looking at the paper.
You know where I learned that?
Social media.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah, I've got the social media. So that's where we found it.
It's so creepy.
It's got like a secret thing.
I know.
Social media, that's your favorite.
Yes. I put it on the social media. There we go. On the World Wide Web. So we're going to win.
Militant apathy. Jeet was channeling his inner black man with the chirping smoke detector. RFK would have the disabled community quarantined or worse. Max Granular. The AI voice has a little too much diction.
Right. Trump sounded clearer than he has in years.
Illuminati Kids. That Scott guy sure can head tilt. Nice eye action, too. Medbed feels similar to the healing pods Frieza had in DBZ. Anime is taking over.
But it's also just revival tent shit that his base is completely primed to believe.
I know. I mean, I just, like, they're... They...
We, it's all Mesmer. It was, yeah. We had that woman on...
Emily Ogden.
Ogden on Mesmerism. And that's what it was. Like, they know he's lying, but they're lying. He's on, they're on the other side of it.
It's all lies. It'll just lie for me.
Small D Democrat. QAA did an episode about med beds. Desperate people have been foregoing healthcare for years now in hopes that Trump will defeat the cabal and reveal the med beds. People will die because of that tweet.
Jesus
Christ. Reveal the med beds. They've just been in the Mar-a-Lago bathroom the
whole
time.
Why do you think he's holding...
That's what he was... Those were the secret documents he took and kept in the bathroom were the
med beds. You want to roll them out now?
We're very worried he's going to reveal the med beds.
I mean, how would we react to like Trump rolling out special beds that fix every problem immediately for no cause? We put us in a tough spot.
It's so American, too, to be like, I want to be laying down and doing nothing as I'm cured.
Well, still, antitrust is very important. That's why, guys, our YouTube numbers are going to go down the tubes if these med beds get revealed.
We're med bed deniers. I swear we need single player.
The left needs to get on board with med beds.
Dave from Jamaica. It's not ableism to mock RFK. That's like saying doing a Trump voice is anti-gay. All right, two more. Ryan the Mainer. Oh, wait, I lost it. Emma Jordy Reporter. Thanks, Emma. Exactly. I don't know what that was referenced to.
Agree.
Where the heck did Ryan the Mainer go? Oh, geez. We got so many IMs, I can't even. Oh, here it is. Ryan the Mainer. Me neither, Sam. I don't. Anti Flockhart, remember Michael Medved? He knew the whole time, right there in the nade. Michael Medved.
We'll find out the Medved sheets were made in the West Bank. That would
What's this?
I have something else to plug that I forgot to, but I am going to be on a phone bank tonight, and we'll put this link in the descriptions as well. Socialist Cash takes out the capitalist trash, trying to raise $100,000 for DSA. I'll be talking on this at 6 o'clock. Just check your links. If you aren't in DSA, now would be a good time to join and support some money. So check this out.
Link will be in the YouTube and podcast descriptions. Dust Collectors, correction, he wants to retire to the Golan Heights. Such a BSer.
You don't even want to be, you don't want to be beachfront, Eric?
Be in the desert. You're taking over from Syria.
That's where his cop stuff will come in.
And the final I am of the day, let's see. A lot of people saying Golan Heights was from...
I'm
I'm sorry for the mistake.
Your boy Blue. And what's the deal with all of these Epstein files? Matt, Brian, Emma, great job today, folks. See you tomorrow.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. The finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know. Gonna kick in, and my pilot light's shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Know how far the detour takes you. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. Shifted it.